Welcome to Voices from the Frontline, segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. My name is Damon Azali, and I'm here with my co-host, Eric Mann. And we are a little helped out today by some grooves from Gil Scott-Heron redoing a Marvin Gaye song, Inner City Blues. Money, we made it. Yeah, but before we see it, they take it. So today we have two special guests. One will be joining us very momentarily, Michelle Shahada, who is a Palestinian activist as well as a member of the Los Angeles 8. Michelle will be talking to us about the recent elections yesterday in Palestine and what it means for the left in Palestine. He will also be giving us an update on his case for the Los Angeles 8. In our second segment, we will be talking to Stephanie Fauché from San Francisco. He's the program director of Death Penalty Focus, and we'll be talking about the case of Donald Beardsley. Beardsley is on California's death row, and his execution is scheduled for next Wednesday, not this Wednesday, the following Wednesday, the 19th. And so we're trying to figure out how we can help to get him from being killed. And Stephanie's also going to be talking a little bit more about the campaign to get a moratorium on the death penalty. So we'll be right back in a second with Michelle.
Natural, a natural practice. Baby, I can't pay no taxes. Yes, it makes me want to holler sometimes.
So we're back, and on the line we have Michelle Shahada, who is a Palestinian activist and a member of the... not by choice, but the member of the Los Angeles 8, and we want to welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So yesterday, the election of Mahmoud Abbas as the president of the Palestinian Authority was confirmed. Michelle, will Abbas be able to do anything different than Arafat has been able to do underneath Israeli occupation?
Well, it depends on what direction his action will go. If he goes to implement the Israeli and the U.S. wishes, then he probably would be able to do more than what Arafat did in that direction. But if he goes other directions and listens to his own people and goes in that direction, he will not be opposed by the Israelis and the U.S., but he will be supported by his own people, and it depends which way you look at it, you know, in terms of how much he will be doing.
Right. So,
what direction he will be doing a lot, and you know, depends on your point of view.
Right. So I was looking at a couple websites today, and Abbas was the candidate he was appointed while Arafat was still alive as prime minister. And some of the websites were saying by Sharon, but with the help of the United States and George Bush. What do you think about those assertions?
Well, Israel and the United States want Mahmoud Abbas to come out and represent the whole Palestinian people, meaning the people in the West Bank, the people in Gaza, the people in the refugee camps and in exile, and the people in the Palestinians inside Israel proper. So if he comes out representing or claiming to represent all of those people, then he'll be able to, in the U.S. view and Israel, to sign a deal that will end the conflict on U.S. and Israeli terms. But if he comes out to represent the people living in the West Bank and Gaza, and then his activities will be confined to making the lives of the Palestinians living in those areas better, then...
So, Michelle, what in your opinion, where does he look like he's going? Is he...
Well, I think he's... Well, if you look at his platform and what he's been saying, he's trying to walk a tightrope between the two positions. He's trying to be in the center. What his platform is that he's trying to achieve a Palestinian state, as he claims, in the West Bank and Gaza, the pre-1967 borders. Now, Sharon, he wants to achieve that negotiating with Israel. But Sharon has declared that this is not the case, and that means the negotiations around these positions have ended from Sharon's point of view, from Israel's point of view. So I think he won't be able to do anything in terms of advancing the Palestinians' self-determination, even within the confines of the two-state solution, as declared by the least common denominator of the Palestinian people. He won't be able to do that because Sharon has said that negotiations around this position is closed. Israel would not negotiate about going back to 1967 borders. It would not accept the right of return. It would not, dismantle the wall. So Mahmoud Abbas' idea of negotiation is a self-sizing, a self-delusion, in my opinion.
Hi, Michelle. This is Eric Mann. How you doing?
Hi, Eric. How you doing? I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Good. I mean, this has certainly been one of the most painful strategic dilemmas for the Palestinian people, and that almost every option in front of them is not necessarily problematic, but with the odds so much against them. I mean, for instance, as you know, the Oslo Accords were the beginning of essentially a set of concessions that were tried to be sold to the West. The Israelis don't seem to want to really move on anything. You told Damon that, you know, how can you have an election under occupation, mm-hmm. which is a good slogan. Where is the left on this? Where is, in terms of the debate, are there left forces in the Palestinian United Front that say, let's use this electoral process? Are there others that say, let's continue the Intifada? Are there others? You know, one thing I was talking, Damon and I were talking in the car on the way over. What option? No, you just go ahead. What options do you see? And are there? And what factions, in the good sense, or groups, are putting forth alternate plans in the Palestinian movement?
All right, the left, the Palestinian left, is in a dilemma, and it's fragmented and in a crisis.
Right.
And his, the left. Problems, the Palestinian left's problems is part of the left problems in the world. But particularly on Palestine, this crisis manifested itself in the latest attempt trying to forge a position, a united position on the left in regards to the elections, and failed. They could not, first of all the factions could not agree on one candidate. For example, the DFLP, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, have advanced their own candidate. The PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, have supported Mustafa Barghouti, for example. And there is also the independent left who are saying that the position should be to boycott the election unless there is a candidate who is clear that, his or her platform is to, like a municipality, a Palestinian municipality, only to represent the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, and only about taking care of day-to-day life, but not the broader political question. So they have failed to really find a candidate, first of all, second, to agree on a candidate, third, to agree on a position of on the elections itself in general. So the Palestinian left is in a dilemma right now, but also this situation is pregnant and opening the windows for the left or a new generation of left to come forward and try to form a position where it will be a magnet or a pull for the left in general to unite around.
So, Michelle, when we listen to, Democracy Now!, we listen to KPFK, et cetera, a lot of times the things that or even, I would say, the mainstream media, a lot of times what we hear is Hamas, we hear Fatah, but there's not, I mean, the only reason I know the PFLP is because I know folks who actually are trying to support Palestinian self-determination. So how do those forces in the United Front, how is the left trying to unite with them and move the United Front forward?
Well, you know, the left has always been a target of being marginalized and a target of being eliminated and within Palestine. So, for example, the Communist Party have broken into three or four factions, and they even denounced their history. The DFLP have broken into also smaller factions, and the PFLP did not broken into smaller factions, but even their Secretary General is in jail right now, and most of their cadres are in jail. So they really are...
As well as there's like an assassination campaign, right?
Well, you know, assassinations, jailing, right. You know, they particularly have been targeted. So, yeah, when you hear about only Hamas and Fatah, those are, you know, the bigger... factions, but the ideas of the left have a lot of support within the Palestinian, you know, communities. The only thing is organizationally, they are right now weak or not able to forge a united voice for the left to make people clear about their position and support it, and then they'll be able to materialize their positions in reality on the ground.
Well, you know, the thing you're saying, which I appreciate, is that, you know, if we look at the left of the United States, which is so factionalized, so weak, so unable to reach even minimal agreements with each other, and yet then you see other people who are in a life and death situation where the choices are so incredibly hard, you know, so I think we're living, as you say, in a period which has been a fairly long period of an absence of a coherent, hegemonic, left point of view in the world that can build parties, that can build organizations, that can either defeat other lines or build united fronts effectively. It makes you think what Mao did, what the Bolsheviks did, you know, what Fidel did, is just almost beyond comprehension. And on the other hand, you have to give the Palestinians credit, given this, which I know you do, given this incredibly factionalized situation and the life and death pressures they're under. It's a miracle that the resistance stays, even if it's not unified, focused on so many different levels of resistance.
That's totally true, Eric. The absence of the left, the absence of organizations on the left, the fragmentation even of the ruling parties of Fatah and the targeted of Hamas living under occupation, and the Palestinian people are still resilient and still fighting, is a statement on the determination of people and the power of people. Although they look weak, but their power in terms of sustaining a resistance against formidable odds, against so powerful an enemy, is beyond belief. And this is why I think if the left is to be revived, if the left and Palestine is to be rejuvenated, to bring about the new ideas, is due to the resilience of the Palestinian people, who will bring forward the necessity for the left to answer some of their questions, to face some of their problems that is due not to the weakening of their people, but to their fragmentation, to their sectarianism, and to their inability to really sit down and talk to each other. But as you mentioned, this is because of the void of an ideological, theory that after the collapse of the Soviet Union kind of left people and organizations perplexed. Because of that, and the I would say the old guards, of those organizations who retreated sometimes to certain dogmas, and who are not able to discuss the new realities, come up with new ideas, and be open, listening to their own people, and come up with answers to the questions facing them on a daily basis.
Well, I have two parts to go from here, because I think you're right that we both agree that the Palestinian masses right now may be holding more initiative than the organized Palestinian left, in the sense of sometimes in the trade unions, you know, you have trade union leaders going in and trying to cut a bad deal. And once in a while in history, they say, my only problem is I can't control my members. They're not going for this deal, you know. So I had two directions I wanted to go simultaneously. One is, I don't have the name of the book, but I sent away for it, is there's a book in Monthly Review being discussed about the absolute moral deterioration of Israel, forgetting about its dubious orientation. I'm not a Zionist, and as a Jew, I've never, you know, I've had a genuine position that the Jewish people were entitled to a homeland, and that homeland was in Germany, and not to affiliate with British imperialism to take a land that was never theirs. So that's my position. I'm not a Zionist, but to the degree there is a homeland debate, if there ever was a time when the Jews deserved a homeland, it was after the post-Nazi redivision of Europe.
Well, even the question of the Jewish homeland in Palestine has been accepted by the Palestinians.
That's right, I know that.
In the sense that they never said we want the Jews out, you know, or we don't want the Jews to have self-determination in Palestine. The idea is, and their idea is more progressive than what any in Israel has brought about, is that, okay, let's have self-determination for all. Let's have a country, a home for all, where it's not, you know, what your religion is or what your ethnicity is what determines if you belong to this state or not, but, you know, as an individual human being, and as a citizen of this state. But see, all of these ideas always have been branded by Israel, branded by the Zionist, non-Jewish Zionists also, the United States and the West, as being ploys by the Palestinians to eliminate Israel by other means. You know, when we say let's build a democratic society where human rights, civil liberties, and justice, economical, everything is the basis of, or the idea that drives building this state, is rejected right away as being a conniving by the Palestinian people to eliminate Israel by other means, to eliminate, quote unquote, the Jewish state. Because the Zionist movement, as everybody knows, is to build its only Jewish state. So only Jewish communities, only Jewish homes, only Jewish roads, and only political system that serves and controlled by Jewish Israelis. And every Jew in the world is eligible to become a citizen of this state, but the indigenous people, the Palestinians, have no place there except, you know, on the margin, where they can serve as cheap labor or to serve that state without getting the benefits of that state.
Well, since we agree on that, I mean, the point I was making was a little different, and I want to segue to a different one. My point is that there's been, even within the creation of Israel, and even with acceptance, you know, there's a lot of different compromises that have been made within the Palestinian movement to accept much more of, quote, Israel's existence. There's discussion of a two-state, the general position is a two-state solution. I know there's another position that calls for eventually a secular, integrated, democratic, and non-theocratic solution. The first point I was trying to make, Michelle, is that there is, you know, as Franz Fanon said, that the that imperialism drives both the oppressed and the oppressor crazy, but he didn't particularly care about the oppressor's mental illness. But there's a lot of writing going on among Israelis and Jews about the deterioration of the Jewish people in Israel, the deterioration of the ethics, the growing you know, sectors that would support even Nazi ideology, the kibbutzim and the alleged socialist original beginnings, that this is now a nation that's in grave danger of becoming an arch-right-wing racist nation that's driving out its left wing, that's driving out Peace Now, that's driving out the progressives who at one point thought that they had, you know, the chance to change Israeli policy. That's just like the United States, that's moving in a very, very dangerous right-wing direction to consolidate a right-wing ideology, majority, and so forth.
I totally agree with that, but I'm not surprised, and it's not something that I realized later on that this is the direction that Israel would take. It's just because the ideology of Zionism that Israel is built upon from the beginning would point to this direction. It would not point to any other direction. And what happens is that when the United States and is going in a direction, a right-wing direction, Israel, Zionism within Israel, and their path in that direction will be faster and will be easier because the whole atmosphere, the global atmosphere, helps the driving forces, the right wing, that wants to keep Israel in that direction, that wants to keep Israel under the hegemony of the ideas of Zionism, their job will become easier. You know, they are now in the same bed with, imagine that, with the Christian right in the United States, with the radical right wing, and they are together partnering and formulating the direction where it's taking the whole world in a very dangerous path.
And my question, my last question before I bounce it back to Damon is, do you see any hope or at least any contradictions in the U.S. occupation of Iraq? Are there debates going on in the broader? Obviously, the Palestinian movement has a variety of different hopes. It hopes for a stronger anti-imperialist movement inside the United States. That's a real long shot right now, although it has wonderful friends here. It's hoping for the coherence of a left wing in its own backyard. That's a long shot for a while. And it's always been hoping for greater leadership and, you know, breaks with the United States inside the Arab world. And it's often been sold out by different Arab nations that have called for Palestinian self-determination but not put their money or their bodies on the line. Are there any developments out of the U.S. occupation of Iraq that you think offer some strategic or tactical hope for the Palestinians?
Well, first of all, the question if I'm hopeful and if the Palestinians are hopeful, every people who resist are optimistic by nature.
That's right.
And if they don't have the hope in front of them, they won't resist anymore. So they're greatly hopeful because they trust, first of all, the power of the people everywhere, and they realize that history does not move in a few years and the life of one generation. This recognition gives them strength and gives them the ability to keep going on because they realize that although it looks, in, you know, from one's life that they've been struggling for a long, long time, but in terms of history, it's been a short time, you know, so hope is on the way. And I hate to quote Kerry for that, but in the sense that the people would not stop resisting when there is oppression. In terms of looking at the United States and looking if there is a movement, the same way they look at themselves, the same way they look at the people everywhere, and especially in the United States. But they look at the people of the United States in a particular way because as the United States now is directly hitting the Arab world in Iraq, helping Israel directly to oppress the Palestinian people, that the movement here in the United States have a special responsibility to integrate and see the Arab world, especially Palestine, Afghanistan and Iraq as a movement, not to separate it. There is an attempt to clear up Palestine from Iraq. And this is wrong, because if you want to build a genuine anti-imperialist movement in the United States, it has to take Palestine on and not be afraid of it. And also the solidarity movement, the anti-imperialist movement right now in the United States should root itself in the Arab world right now, because the Arab world is at the forefront right now fighting the empire project in Iraq and in Palestine.
Michelle, and just one thing before you go on. I just want to, because I didn't want to miss it. The Strategy Center and myself, which is maybe more important, as just speaking for myself, there are efforts in the anti-imperialist movement to de-link the Palestinian struggle from the Iraqi struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that I strongly oppose that, and that I don't understand how you can de-link the so-called war on terrorism, the invasion of Iraq, the occupation of Palestine. So I know there are some groups that have been calling for U.S. out of Iraq, but have not been talking about cutting off U.S. aid to Israel, and we disagree with that. You know, you and I both disagree with that, right?
Sure, and I'm not saying having a slogan sometimes or an event that would say U.S. out of Iraq without mentioning Palestine. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about understanding the linkage between what's going on in Iraq, in Palestine, and also in other parts of the world. And you cannot say Iraq by itself is a phenomena that is that stands on its own. And this is, you know, some of the liberal forces in the United States think of it that way. And whenever you mention Palestine, they think that mentioning Palestine weakens, you know, what you do in Iraq, because other people don't agree with that. But the idea is other people don't agree because they don't understand it, and the left, the true left, should take on this task and explain to the general public the linkage and why it's important to fight the fight together without tearing it up or delinking it, because that weakens the movement. But let me get back to the point, because I think it's an important point that I was making, is that the solidarity movement here and the anti-imperialist movement should root itself, and I mean root itself in the Arab world, because now it's Iraqis and the Palestinians are fighting the empire project directly and head on. And when I say root themselves in the Arab world, I mean to get to know the Arab world, to get to hold conferences on the soil of the Arab world, to go there and link with the grassroots over there, with the movement over there, and not just try to academically understand them and link with them from their point of view here when it's convenient. I think they, you know, conferences should be held in the Arab world, delegations should go, meetings should be held, and in that way, I think the movement here can have an understanding of the Arab world, but also can link itself to the fight against the empire project that is taking place on Arab soil.
So, Michelle, one of the...
Tell them who we are.
This is KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. I have a quick question before I want to get to the LA 8 and what's going on with that. I think it's really interesting when we talk about kind of like the history of, I'll just say a quote from Malcolm X, and I'm going to get it wrong, I'm sure. But it was basically, he was saying how you can't be nonviolent with a nonviolent enemy. Or you can't be nonviolent with a violent enemy. And so I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the role of the tactic of armed struggle within the kind of Palestinian liberation movement. And where are, in particular around, you know, Abbas, who just is now the president of the Palestinian Authority, but then also some of the other candidates that I'm sure still have some support and be able to move some of just kind of the thinking around that. So I wanted to see what you knew of their positions on armed struggle and et cetera.
Well, you know, those are questions of tactics.
Right.
If people agreed on the strategic goal of, the right of return, the self-determination for the Palestinian people, and what the Palestinian people want to achieve, then, they can disagree on tactics and have a lively debate. And the Palestinian people, is very, very diverse. So there is people who support certain, armed struggle. They are against, for example, the limiting the armed actions on the West Bank and Gaza, and not to do it beyond the 1967 border inside Israel. There are people who disagree with armed struggle altogether, and they want to have a nonviolent mass struggle only. There are people who agree on the struggle and disagree on certain tactics and aspects of it, like the rockets, Al-Qassam rockets that Hamas uses, or the suicide bombing that has been used. So all of these, in my opinion, are not real issues if they agree that resistance to occupation, resistance to discrimination, resistance to racism, and activism for democracy, self-determination, and human rights and civil rights all together, then, they can find the answer to these six questions, because what works, works. You know, if a nonviolent resistance works and forces Israel and forces the West to recognize the Palestinian right, then it should be pursued. If not, then other things like armed struggle should be pursued. So the Palestinians don't say just armed struggle. They say their slogan is resistance by all means. By all means means if we start with the least violence, but if it's not working, then we go to the next step, and then the next step, and the next step. Because the armed struggle is not really a choice for the Palestinian people because they like it. It's when they have no other choices.
Right.
You put any weak person, any place, they'll try everything. First, they'll try the least harmful things to themselves and to the people they're struggling against, because they don't want to harm themselves also.
Right.
You know? And then if that doesn't work, they keep going until they say, well, you know, I have nothing else left for me to lose but to offer my life as a last resort for resistance. And this is what the Palestinian people have been facing. They've been pushed into a corner where every other option is not open for them. Then, they have only one option left, is to kill themselves with their enemy. So I keep saying, even the suicide bombing, even all of these, actions that are opposed by others are not a development of the Palestinian society. This is a development of the occupation, of oppression. They don't belong to the Palestinian society. They belong to oppression. Take oppression away, these things
right.
will disappear.
Right, right. So thank you for that, Michelle. Well, based on the last minute and a half we have, if you can give us an update on the Los Angeles 8 and if there's anything that people can actually do to help.
Well, we have a couple of things, important developments. First, we have a date for a court hearing, which is in July 15th to July 23rd of this year, the immigration building in Los Angeles. And we are going to be tried under the new act, the Patriot Act, because now we are charged under Patriot. So since 1987, as you know, we've been charged under every new law that comes along. So we started with the McCarran-Walter. We went into the 1990 Immigration Act, the 1996 Anti-Terrorism Act, and so on and so forth. And now we're charged under Patriot. So we hope that people would show up at the court and fill up the court, and just to make the government and the judge realize that this case is not forgotten, and there is a lot of support for the government to drop this case. And in between now and July, we'll be putting out information, and we'll get it to people, as fast as we can.
Sorry we didn't give your important case more time. What are the name of some of your key attorneys, and what's the telephone number or website that people can reach you at? And we'll, Michelle, we'll have you back to talk about the case, you know, before it comes up.
Yeah, well, right. Well, our attorneys are David Cole from Washington, D.C., Mark Vanderhout from San Francisco, Lenny Weinglass, and many other volunteers. For now, we are putting back together the Committee for Justice. We are in the process of doing that, and we don't have a phone number right now for the Committee for Justice, but we use the ADC phone number, which is in Anaheim. I don't have that number on me right now, but maybe next time when I get on, I'll have all the information ready. Right now, what's important is to know that July 15th is the hearing, and we want people to show up that day if they can to fill up the courtroom, and we'll be putting out the information of a phone number, website, and other information shortly.
And thanks for your courage for living under an indictment since 1987. You've done great, Michelle, and we'll promise we'll have you back on.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
You're listening to Voices from the Front Lines, and we'll be right back with Stephanie Fauché from Death Penalty Focus.